Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about faith, family, freedom, the state of Illinois, our nation, and conservative action. Here's David Smith and Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. I'm Monty Larrick, joined by David Smith.
Hello.
David is the executive director of the Illinois Family Institute and Illinois Family Action. Dave?
Yes, sir.
Marijuana, our topic once again, and it's a very important topic, and that's why we're devoting so much attention to it, because Illinois lawmakers could conceivably try to legalize marijuana.
That's
when
right.
Do you think they might try to do that?
Well, my fear is that they're working right now to soften the ground. They're going to be working throughout the summer, into the fall, after the November election, when those lawmakers who have already announced their retirement, those lawmakers who have been defeated in the primary or in the general, become lame duck lawmakers. And lame duck means they're no longer held accountable to the voters back home in their districts, and they're going to finish, quote unquote, finish business down in Springfield before the new lawmakers come in and the new General Assembly session starts. This is where we find controversial legislation passed in Illinois, and this is highly controversial. This is going to be highly consequential to our folks here in Illinois. And so maybe those folks who don't want to hear from their constituents will take a bullet for the proponents of this bill and say, sure, I'll vote for that. That's my fear, is the lame duck veto session.
And I think we pretty much know that the nominees for governor, J.B. Pritzker on the Democratic side,
right,
favors legalization.
Yes, he does.
Governor Rauner, at least at this point, says
right,
he does not, but we know things could change with him.
Well, you know, he's lied to us before, so I'm not going to hold my breath.
Okay. Well, we have a guest, and our guest is Joe McGuire, who is the chairman of the Board of the National Drug and Alcohol Screening Association. She's a Colorado native, and if you don't know, Colorado has been one of those states that have legalized recreational marijuana. It's been in place for 5 years. Joe, we've already talked about some of the dire consequences of that. But let's say 5 years from now, after Illinois has legalized marijuana, the recreational use of marijuana, what will the landscape look like here?
Wow, what a difficult question that is, because I look around Colorado, especially those neighborhoods who opted into retail. Remember that in our state, two-thirds of our communities have the opportunity to say we do not want to engage in the retail market. Illinoisans don't have that choice.
That's right. The current bill doesn't offer that to
us, right,
which is rotten, because a lot of downstate communities would say, no way, no thank you.
Right. So in Colorado, our major metro areas opted in, with the exception of, I think, Colorado Springs, Colorado, where
sure,
I'm from. So, you know, let's just take Pueblo, Colorado, as a microcosm of this. We've had an incredible increase in homelessness in that community. Many folks flock to Colorado because of legal marijuana. And you can see with the position of Illinois, you're going to have people from some surrounding states, some more conservative states with those Midwestern values who are going to say, you know, we're not going down that path. Well, they'll come right here to Illinois, and especially the Chicago area, I believe. And those folks are really not looking to work and hold jobs. They're looking to use pot and be a part of a community that is centralized and focused on.
And what has that done to the welfare service services?
My gosh. Our system is so overburdened right now. We're nearly bankrupt. So we talk about we're going to inject these, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. We were watching some video recently from some physicians in Pueblo in the emergency department.
That's right.
And they said, we can't take anymore. We don't have enough physicians. We don't have enough treatment centers. We don't have
enough
homeless shelters.
The emergency room doctor was saying, look, we usually have a busy season, mm-hmm, and then it subsides. We haven't had it subside.
Right.
It's busy all the time.
Constantly. That's Dr. Karen Randall of Pueblo, Colorado. You can YouTube her talking about this issue.
It was very alarming to hear
what
she said.
What they're seeing in the emergency room. So we're also seeing higher crime. We are seeing gun battles, and people think this is so exaggerated, but I have watched police footage of gun battles taking place in normal everyday neighborhoods where people come in to rob someone of their marijuana grow or their cash and their weapons, because there's always weapons involved in this situation.
We're being told that legalized marijuana will reduce crime.
Listen, the marijuana industry pulled out a couple of nonviolent crimes that went down since 2012 and tried to correlate that directly with legal marijuana. However, they didn't pull the numbers for violent crimes. All violent crimes are up. Now, I want you to understand something. Our law enforcement officers will say marijuana-related violent crimes in particular have skyrocketed, and keep our law enforcement officers on their toes.
Oh, yeah, they're super busy, right?
Yes, they are.
Well, in Cook County, the board president, Tony Preckwinkle, has come out in favor of recreational marijuana in the state of Illinois, saying it's a social justice issue for black and brown kids who are being arrested disproportionately, she says, with marijuana offenses. And she believes by legalizing marijuana, that will alleviate that problem. Has it helped in Colorado?
I would beg her to come and take a look at stories we are hearing in Colorado, facts, statistics, and news reports that very clearly show that minority arrests have gone up in the state of Colorado, not down.
Insert scratching record sound here. What? Wait a minute. They're up?
They are absolutely up. So we have the marijuana retail stores are disproportionately located in the low-income neighborhoods.
Mm.
And then you have those populations saying, hey, wait a minute, we are overrun with these retail stores and the smell and the people coming in who are using this pot, but we are unfairly kept at a disadvantage by not being able to engage in the entrepreneurial side of this. We don't get to partake or benefit from any of the business aspect, and then our arrests are still increasing for minority populations, not going down, not going away. So we have some neighborhoods in Denver that are speaking out about this, and they are saying this is harmful to minority and economically depressed people.
I'm not confident that the establishment media is going to be helping them echo their
concerns. Of course not. Of course not.
Because they're cheerleaders.
That's why our message is so important, to get the word out.
That's what we're doing here. So we're trying.
Yeah. So would you encourage Illinois lawmakers to pay a visit to Colorado before they vote on this?
What I would say is come to Colorado, but seek out the right people. Most lawmakers that come and do tours of Colorado, they contact people who are in the marijuana industry. I have heard some of those individuals say, if you didn't know marijuana was legal in Colorado, you would just never know. Well, they are being very careful about how they route people around the homeless tent cities, how they route people around downtown Denver so you don't smell the marijuana stench. They're being careful to not talk to the district attorney in Colorado Springs, who says the only thing legal marijuana has brought my community is more homicide. So if you want to connect with the Rocky Mountain High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area, or HIDA group, they are very careful to collect statistics from law enforcement, from Department of Education, from local schools, and they have a wonderful report called the HIDA Report on the Outcomes of Marijuana Legalization.
And can you find that online?
You can find that at rockymountainhida.org. RMHIDTA.org. They've compiled this report every year for the last several years. The Denver Post, by the way, gives them a paragraph, about three sentences. It says, hey, the new report's out, whatever, whatever, you know, but this information is a bombshell.
Yeah, it is.
That would show citizens in other states, holy cow, what is going on in that state? So I want to really help people understand. Contact the right folks. Contact me. ask for a group of people of treatment providers. Ask for pain management physicians who are struggling to keep their patients sober. We have educators who are involved. We have a great team of people who are concerned about healthy and safe Colorado.
Talk to homeless shelters and addiction recovery centers.
Absolutely. Yeah. Talk to local law enforcement.
Oh, yeah.
Go visit Pueblo, Colorado. What an eye-opening experience, a devastating experience. Right now, Pueblo, Colorado has a population of 160,000, and right now they have 15,000 homeless people.
Whoa.
I mean, nearly 10% of their city population are homeless, and that has never been the case in Pueblo before. This is new. And again, I want to say those folks are very open and proud of the fact that they came to the marijuana Mecca. And it's no secret for us, we call them marijuana refugees.
And they're content living in tents and getting high, stoned every single day.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
This is Illinois Family Spotlight. We'll continue our discussion with Joe McGuire after this.
People are talking a lot about healthcare these days. There are so many changes, so many questions. As Christians, where can we turn for answers? Well, at Samaritan Ministries, we believe the answer is in Jesus Christ, working in the lives of his people, demonstrating Christian community by sharing each other's medical needs, scripturally, faithfully. Here's just part of Lana's story in her own words.
I love getting the monthly share that I give to each month that has a name of a real person and their real medical concerns and a prayer request, you know, for them. That I get to interact with people from all over the country, just like me, and get to pray for them and know that they're praying for me when I have a need. It's great. I love it.
Lana is just one of over 200,000 members who are sharing over $23 million in medical needs each month. If you'd like to experience what it's like to partner with other Christians for your healthcare needs, and you'd like to see what other members are saying, visit MySamaritanStory.org.
This is Dan Prof with 60 Seconds of Sanity for Upstream-Ideas.com. Sarah Sanders refused to oblige CNN's Jim Acosta's demand to remove the enemy of the people moniker President Trump has bestowed upon the D.C. press corps. I guess the Secret Service protection Sanders now requires and the calls from that same press corps' fellow travelers to subject her to a lifetime of public harassment has Sanders not particularly interested in what Acosta thinks he deserves. Is the D.C. press corps a protector of the people? Is it a professional fourth estate acting as a check on the ruling class? Those descriptions don't seem to fit either, do they? Not all the members of the press corps are enemies to all of the people, but the great majority are devotees of every big government gambit launched since the New Deal. They cheer the economically illiterate agitprop of a millennial bartender and the communist virtue signaling of a backup quarterback. They want to force men into your daughter's locker room, Howard Zinn into her classroom, and religion out of her life. They call for our discourse to be elevated while welcoming a racist simp to the New York Times editorial board. They champion policies and policymakers who oppose free minds and interfere in free markets. Maybe the word to describe such people is not enemy, but I know it's not friend either.
Thanks for joining us here on Illinois Family Spotlight. Monty Lurick here along with David Smith.
I'm here.
And we're joined by Joe McGuire, the chairman of the board of the National Drug and Alcohol Screening Association, Colorado native, and knows firsthand about the tragic impact that legalized recreational marijuana, this new high-potency marijuana, is having in her home state. And her advice to Illinois lawmakers is to steer clear of legalization in the land of Lincoln. You've talked about increased crime, even increased violent crime, increased homelessness.
Yes.
And are you seeing the impact on the unborn? In relation to the legalization of marijuana?
Yeah.
Good question.
Yeah, tell us.
You know, it's really sad to see that many expecting mothers have been told by those peddling marijuana that it you know, takes away nausea, and it's safe. It's natural. It's a natural remedy for early trimester nausea. And we have public health campaigns in our health departments trying to educate young women that cannabis crosses the placental barrier, and your baby does get the THC, the psychoactive component of cannabis when it's consumed by mom. And then also we're seeing that, you know, they're not stopping after the first trimester. They continue to use through the second trimester and the third trimester. And in Pueblo, Colorado alone, we're seeing that over 50% of babies born in Pueblo are born THC positive.
50%.
Over 55-0.
Oh my goodness. So, and we don't know what the long-term effects of this is going to be. We know that THC causes brain damage in people who use it under 25, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
What about the preborn?
Well, we have a few studies. We don't have as many as we need to have.
Sure, sure.
We don't know what we're going to know, of course, in the next decade or two. I expect we'll see something similar to fetal alcohol syndrome sure. in the days ahead of us.
Makes sense.
But already we know that we can have children born with smaller brain development, smaller head measurement. They can have trouble concentrating in school. There's an increased ADHD type diagnosis. We're starting to see it like ages 8, 9, and 10, kids who are very predisposed to addiction. And we have yet to do these ongoing generational studies to really know the long-term outcomes. But this is devastating. And I got to tell you, one of the most worrisome things is that because it's legal, social services just really has to look the other way. We don't place babies in foster care because they're born addicted to this drug.
My. Well, we've talked about the crime element and the homeless factor and the impact on the unborn. Maybe it's high time that the church speaks out on this.
That's right.
Amen. You know, I agree with that.
What about parents and grandparents? What should they be doing and church leaders to help their young people understand that this is as dangerous, if not more, than alcohol?
Talk about it. Talk about it. Talk about it. And, you know, I just wanted to share with y'all that I grew up in a Christian home. I raised my children in a Christian home. My kids were in youth group, and, you know, I was the PTA mom, and I was the women's ministry leader in my church, and I lived one block away from the church so my kids could walk to Sunday school and youth group.
That's convenient.
I want to tell you, you know, my vested interest in my children was creating the biggest, safest bubble that I could create to protect them.
Sound like a good ma.
Absolutely, right? So I never, never considered that my kids would seek out drugs.
Mm-hmm.
This was something that was, you know, intrinsically known in my house, the do's and the don'ts. I did make the mistake of not talking about this enough, and frankly, I didn't know about it anyway. It just was something that was very foreign to me. I had not yet gotten into the field of work that I currently do, so, you know, we talked about a lot of things. This was not one of them. I wanted to tell you that one night, as I was sleeping, my older son came and woke me up about 3 o'clock in the morning. And he said, "Mom, I need you to come downstairs because my brother just tried to hang himself in the closet."
Oh my goodness.
And I ran downstairs, and there was my second oldest son sitting on his bed, deep ligature marks around his neck. He had hung himself with a belt from the bedroom closet. This was shocking to our family. It was devastating. This was a kid who was musically gifted, academically gifted. Sure, I was having some attitude problems with him. You know what mom does with a teenage boy. But I right, will say that I went to the pediatrician a couple of times and said, you know, I'm a little worried. There's been grades dropping, and it seems like we're having trouble paying attention in school, and this isn't like him. But there again, my pediatrician was a dear friend from church,
mm-hmm.
and she was my roommate at the women's ministry retreat, so in my bubble.
She didn't suspect anything?
Never thought drugs. We just never thought that. So here we are, and I have my son in the emergency room, and the hospital social worker comes to me and says, you know, Mrs. McGuire, we need to talk about your son's marijuana use. And, you know, I hate to admit this. It makes me cringe. I've always been the kind of mom that if you told me my kid, you know, messed up, I would be like, you know, let's deal with it. That sounds like one of my kids.
And yeah.
But I looked her in the eye and I said, he does not use marijuana. And she said, well, according to him, he's using quite a bit. I couldn't comprehend that I wouldn't know that. You know, I felt like I knew everything about my kids.
Sure, sure.
And I said, he is lying to you. And I'm so embarrassed about that now, but I look back and I remember her face and, you know, she just thought, oh, give me a break, another one of these moms. And I, you know, it snapped me too. And I said, I don't know what to say right now. Well, that began a journey of in and out of inpatient treatment and outpatient treatment and mental health treatment. And, you know, then the state actually requires you to do a number of things when your child attempts suicide, psychiatric care and all of these things. I mean, we went through this for a couple of years. Unfortunately, by the time this was discovered, he was 17. I only had a year where I could mandate this. But he did want to live at home, so I actually got a little bit more time to try to get my hands around the issue. The hard part of this was tackling a newly diagnosed mental health disorder with an addiction. And it wasn't just the addiction of marijuana, it's the mindset that is intrinsically seated into the brain of our kids. How did this happen? How did this happen? So that was the question I asked myself, was how did we get here? And later on down the road, I learned that as my son was hanging out with another family in the church that I trusted, a friend having a sleepover, the kids were talking about their nervousness around girls. The father says, you know, that's anxiety. And I have
it's normal.
Right? Right? So much of that is normal, and we just need to learn how to deal with it. But he said, you know, what would really help is this natural remedy called marijuana. And he began smoking it with my son and his son when they were in junior high school.
Oh, my gosh.
And then my son continued, and his use became more frequent in high school. And at the end of the day, he ended up dropping out of school, which I never thought a child of mine would not graduate from high school. Sadly, he made the choice to go live on the streets. And for several years, he lived on the streets, and he went out west. He traveled up and down the West Coast.
Of hard knocks, huh?
Absolutely. You know, he was scared to death. He would call me and say, you know, there's a bum feed tonight, and I got some soup. This is my kid who was just, you know, this amazing, promising young man with a future. And he would snap a picture of himself one time, and I couldn't even recognize him. You know, the stories go on and on. It was terrifying. It was a terrifying time.
What would you say, Joe, to parents who may think they know everything that's going on, who have their kids involved in youth group, who go to church regularly? What would you say to them about this naive curve or this naivety curve? Right.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, like I said, I didn't talk about this enough, if at all, because I assumed drugs were a known, you know.
Off limits,
yep. Yeah.
Don't take it for granted.
Right. So I didn't have the conversations I should have had. Secondly, you toss those rooms. You toss those rooms and you look for everything and you educate yourselves on what is paraphernalia. What does that look like? President Ronald Reagan said, trust, but verify. Right?
So no privacy?
Right. This is my home.
That's right.
And I pay for this home and I want you to live here. I love that you live here, but we're going through your things.
What else does it say about the other families in the church? I mean, we love them. We can fellowship with them. Mm-hmm. But yet...
Once again, have the conversation, because I have now learned later on in these years since that happened that other families were struggling with this. We were embarrassed. We weren't talking to each other. We weren't leaning on each other.
So other young people were introduced to marijuana by this one father.
Absolutely. And, you know, and by other kids in the youth group. It was coming in.
Sure.
And so kids were getting exposed to this. It was becoming a normal part of their culture. And so we have other parents who have dealt with this issue, and we have all suffered in silence.
Oh, yeah.
I remember reaching out to the youth pastor and saying, I don't know what's wrong. My son needs some one-on-one time. He could really use a mentor. Can you help me? And he said, I'm sorry, I'm too busy for that. I can't deal with that right now.
Wow.
You know, we rely on the body of Christ and the church community as our family.
Yeah.
And if we don't have these conversations, our pastors need to talk about this. Our youth pastors need to be aware and understand. And I'm going to tell you, there needs to be zero tolerance for allowing kids to partake in drug and alcohol use. And then we approach it with love.
Yeah.
Kids need to go to rehab that have a problem. They've got to have professional help. We can't do it ourselves. There are many wonderful programs out there. And guess what? There are church-based programs that are very successful that we could do right within the community. But we have got to stop pretending like it's not coming into our bubble and it doesn't affect us.
Yeah. No, good words of advice.
Joe, would you like to see a pastor or two out here in Illinois to dedicate a sermon to marijuana?
Absolutely. I have to tell you that it's heartbreaking when you go to a church and you say, I want to talk to the parents. Just give me 5 minutes, give me 10 minutes. And there's a real reluctance to acknowledge this issue, or they feel that it's too political. So we don't want to talk about something that's too political. You know, that needs to stay out in the secular world.
That's right. We've experienced that at IFI where we've been turned down. We don't want to address that because it's too political. And unfortunately, Christians, we have to understand that there's nothing under the earth that Christ doesn't have domain over, right?
That's right.
Nothing. Number two, we have to have a biblical worldview about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes marijuana. It's not just that. It's 1 Peter 5:8 says, be sober-minded, be alert, because your adversary, the devil, roams around looking for who he can devour. All right, so think about that. When you're on marijuana, you can't be sober and you can't be alert. And guess what? You're vulnerable.
Exactly. And I would just like to add that, you know, we hear all the time, it's natural. God created it. God gave it to us. God gifted us with his natural substance. Of course, there are a lot of natural things we don't take into our bodies.
That's right.
There's the fall. The fall corrupted so many natural things that grow on the earth. But, you know, the very first thing that God did in the Garden of Eden was he said to Adam and Eve, here's the tree of life, do not partake. That was natural.
That's a wonderful point.
That grew out of the ground.
Yeah.
Right? And so we've got to, I know.
Use discernment.
Yes, I know that we know better than this.
Mm-hmm.
Why we are being led down this path, it's pure deception.
It is.
And we have to put a stop to it.
That's
we have to.
Joe, if there's a parent out there that's listening to this, or maybe a pastor or a youth director, they want to talk about this issue to their loved ones and the people in their congregation, the kids in their youth group, can you help them out in any way?
You know, I would love to be as much help as I can and a resource. I have some resources on my website. I can have personal conversations. I've done webinars with church groups clear up in Alaska from my desk. I can come personally. But there's some great resources and materials out there as well that I can recommend. Whatever we can do, we're not only dealing with educating our families about addiction, we need in the church to recognize that we're dealing with addiction in the pew. Mm. And the life of an addict, the life of the mother and the father of an addict, the brother and the sister of an addict, it's painful.
Yes.
And it can lead us to despair when we're dealing with it alone and we're crying out to God and we're not sharing that burden with anyone else.
Yeah.
We have a lot of work to do here and a lot of improvement to make. But yeah, if people want to go to joemcguire.org, joe@joemcguire.org is my email. Joe McGuire is spelled joemcguire.org.
All right. Thank you so much, Joe McGuire. God bless you and your work.
Yes.
Thank you.
And you're in a tough fight, but you're doing it.
That's right.
That's right. By the will of God.
Amen.
All right.
Keep it up.
Well, thank you, folks, for listening. And until next time, God bless.
Thank you for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. For more information, please visit us at ifiaction.org and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to email us questions or comments, please do so at feedback@ifiaction.org. Until next time, stay engaged and keep your eyes on the prize.